B-Pod Studios.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another week of Checkpoint Daily. On today's show, we'll be talking about the end of the Overwatch League season and the new champions anime heroes, the Shanghai Dragons. Also, a brief look at Overwatch 2. And we'll be talking a little bit about Twitch. They could be requiring phone numbers for you to chat in your favorite streams. Also, we got our first look at The Last of Us coming to HBO Max, as well as the Cowboy Bebop live action adaptation. All of you need to calm down. And we will also talk Marvel Monday, What If, and where the show is going, and the future of the Marvel Cinematic TV comic book universe. This is Checkpoint Daily.
The latest esports and gaming news. Checkpoint XP Daily has got you covered. Find it online at checkpointxp.com. Get in the game.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Checkpoint Daily. Your host, Norris Hauer, here. As always, very excited to get this thing underway. We got a ton to talk about today, stuff that I'm very excited about. But before we get too deep into that, I have to introduce you, as always, to our motley crew here. To my left, La Barba Obscura, Weird Beer, what's up?
I've been playing so much WarioWare. I know nobody takes it seriously.
No, I want to play.
Hold on my drive into work today, there was someone riding a bike in overalls with a yellow shirt and a purple cap.
Yes!
And I don't know if it was on purpose or not.
It has to be.
Wario Fever is back, baby.
That's a much better ride in than I had, because I literally saw a man urinating in the middle of the street today.
That's okay. All I have to say is WarioWare is a game made for this younger generation.
it's the 3 seconds.
Literally 3 seconds of like dopamine hits over and over, just flashing lights at your brain. It's like being in a gacha arcade. I love it so much.
Without having to spend the money on
no
the
money.
Gacha.
Just being, getting garlic and tweezing Zeus's hair.
I mean, the not having to spend money part of it sounds great, but literally you have just described what hell is to me. Basically.
I don't know.
That sounds
like a workout. In essence. That's all it is.
It's a mental
workout.
Listen, you're not going to be like, oh, let me relax before bed for 15 minutes with WarioWare. Like,
you'd be sweating.
You're going to be just shaking afterwards. But if you're ready to, like, you know, just violently be over dopamined in your chair, WarioWare, get it together.
I slam a Red Bull almost every day. Yeah. I am ready for this.
This is terrible. Anyway, hello, Chad. Chad Callahan is here.
I thought you were going to go to Robbie's. So
no.
I wasn't ready.
I got to keep you on your toes. You got to be always ready.
That's what it is. You told me to calm down because of Cowboy Bebop. I will not. I am so excited.
Listen, being excited is cool. I'll get into why everybody else needs to calm the fuck down.
That's fair. Although I saw they casted Ayn, and that's all I needed.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That dog is so freaking adorable.
So cute.
Most adorable
I hope
dog.
It's the same one that they used in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'd love to see his career just take off.
Just the same dog. I've been following this dog's career for a number of years now.
I would.
Actually, they used a different dog in the last season, so he might have passed away or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that happens. Anyway, Shake and Bake, Robbie Landis is here.
That's right. I'm here as well talking about... Yeah. Speaking of games that we've been playing, I am trying to cram as much Deathloop and Kena Bridge of Spirits in as I can, because I realize that Far Cry 6 comes out in like less than 2 weeks. I'm trying. And that's on top of the fact that I'm still, obviously, you know,
Apex and
I'm behind Apex on the Battle Pass. I'm going to have to do like some like 24-hour like marathons or something, so get ready for that, Weird, but I'm roping you into it. And then obviously still enjoying my time in Genshin as well. So
wow.
I've actually stopped playing FF14.
Also,
I don't have time for
it. Shots. All right. Okay.
I don't know. I am near the end of Deathloop, or at least the main story of Deathloop.
What you think is the
end. What I think is the end, but I could be
wrong.
How
many hours you put in it?
I don't know.
16. Like, I saw on Steam last night.
Was it 16?
Somewhere. It was like 16 or 18. And because I looked up, you know, when I realized, like, oh my God, I have to get done with these games in 2 weeks. I'm like, on average, how long does it take to beat? Completionist run for Deathloop is under 30 hours.
Excellent.
Main story only is about 17 to 18.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I know there's a lot of side shit.
Much side stuff.
So I'm enjoying that. But I played that. I've actually been playing a lot more 14. I'm on my second playthrough of Three Houses now. And I got to finish all of it somehow before Metroid Dread comes out.
Well, you still have a whole month then.
Do I?
Right?
Metroid Dread comes out October 8th.
Oh, never mind. I thought it was November something. Yeah, no. You ain't got time.
Nope. I ain't got time. It's over. Because Three Houses is still taking up so much of my time.
Metroid shouldn't be that long of a game, though, right?
Nah, but I'm like, that is one of the few games that I'm like, every room.
Yeah, a Metroid game, especially any Metroidvania game, is designed to not only be played one time where you explore everything, but then going back a few other times. And doing it again.
Here's the thing, though. Norris, like, devours JRPGs for breakfast. So
I really do blow through games very quickly.
Like you said, you're on your third playthrough of Three Houses, all right?
Just the second, but I'm okay, like, still, I'm 40% Metroid, of the way through.
Metroid is going to be fine. You'll be all right.
Yeah. But anyway, with all that said, here's what's happening in the world of video games. Now, obviously, over the weekend was the grand finals of the Overwatch League. We have seen the last season of Overwatch 1, and let me say, it could not have been more fitting for the Shanghai Dragons to be crowned as the final champions of Overwatch 1. So going through it, before we continue, that leaves our champions at the... London Spitfire inaugural champions. Then what was it? Two straight for the San Francisco Shock. And now Shanghai. So there's only been three champions in the history of the Overwatch League so far. Excellent play from Shanghai. I'm just happy Fleta has a championship because he could ride off to the sunset and say, I'm the greatest Overwatch player. Fuck y'all.
I think it's great that if you go into Google and just type Shanghai Dragons, here's some what autocomplete fills for you. Shanghai Dragons losing streak. Shanghai Dragons 0-40. Shanghai Dragons first win. Shanghai Dragons, will they go to playoffs? Shanghai Dragons bad team. And it's just like, how did this team come together to win the championship?
It's called a rebuild.
And here's the thing. I feel like, yeah, we like to talk about the whole meme of the 0-40 season and you know, the anime storyline. But the Dragons actually got, like, significantly better after their first rebuild. Like, was the 0-40 season terrible? Absolutely. But they replaced a majority of their players and their coaching staff. Mm-hmm. You have to realize that even in 2020, last year, like, we're talking about how did they get here? They have 5 stage titles under their belt.
That's true. Mm-hmm,
absolutely. And on top of that, went in and got one of the greatest players of all time in Fleta, one of the greatest coaches of all time in Moon, and they completely rebuilt top to bottom.
Yes.
So that 0-40 team that everybody is talking about
doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
In fact, what you need to take from this is that if you actually, like, you know, examine your life, figure out what's going wrong, and then put in the work to change things about yourself and actually build yourself back up, you too could be a champion.
The work and what I expect is money.
It doesn't just happen overnight, all right? You got to really put the work in. You probably have to go to therapy as well, right? But you too can be a champion even if you're an 0-40
loser. How long
ago
was that 0-40?
4 years.
First season.
Oh, that's a long time to get better.
Exactly.
Especially when the first season is, and even beyond that, by
season two, you had already begun to see so many signs of improvement beyond just the players that were there. Yeah. I mean, they had brought in a number of players. I thought about when they first brought in DM as well, and they started a core around DM, and they went on a long streak.
They were 13-15 the season after, so that was already a dramatic,
You went from no wins ever to 500, basically. So that puts you on a whole nother level. They kept building upon it. Last year, they were truly probably supposed to win last year, but ended up facing the San Francisco that just so happened to be filled with all the big-time players. This is a team that knows how to show up in playoff
2020,
time.
They were 19-2.
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
They were supposed to win last year, but came up against San Francisco, who, again, that's a playoff team. They know what to do. But now that this is over, now that this is the last season that we'll ever see this version of Overwatch, again, it feels fitting that it's Shanghai. But we got a glimpse of a full match of the new game mode, Push, of Overwatch 2. I'm not sure if everybody got a chance to watch this. I watched this match in its entirety about 2.5 times just to pull out as much as I possibly could from this match. I want to throw it to Robbie first. Overall, what are your opinions of what you saw?
Well, the first thing is, obviously, as far as aesthetics go, this is still Overwatch, right? But as far as the gameplay goes, like, this is basically a new game.
Really?
You know, you're chopping out an entire position, an entire role, right? You're going down to five people,
True.
And then just looking at the rebuilds that we have for some of the characters, I mean, you know, there's still obviously a lot of it that is familiar, but it's also essentially, you know, these are all either balance changes or reworks that had Overwatch 2 just still been Overwatch, and they were just making the changes as they go along. We may have eventually got here before, but I mean, you know, Bastion's playing completely differently because he can move around in his turret
Sombra's
form now.
Sombra's totally different.
Sombra's completely different. They're taking away, you know, they're trying to tone down crowd control. So now when you're hacked, you're not actually hacked like the full 5 seconds that you normally are. It lasts for like a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been rumors that May won't be able to freeze anymore.
Slow down.
From the perspective of pros relearning this game, this is a new game.
So I think the best analysis that I read on this came from a friend of the show, Jake Lyon, from the Houston Outlaws, who was also a previous caster. And he said, I mean, he gave a big, long thread. The thing that I pulled out the most of it is he said, I think that the most important thing that's going to happen with Overwatch 2 is that the importance of hero picks is going to just kind of disappear. It's going to be less a game based on what hero meta that you're choosing. Mm-hmm. And much more about just like playing
skill.
Yeah, playing the game.
Playing in your total team composition. And that's what I noticed, because a player who was in the matches himself, Space from the LA Glads, said after the match, like, everybody's DPS now. Like, literally every hero that they picked had the potential to do good amounts of damage.
They're doing a similar thing to what Valorant recently did, wanting to put more focus on the gunplay than the abilities. And by taking out, you know, again, kind of nerfing Sombra's crowd control, mm-hmm. and the same thing with what they do with Mei, they want to get away from the idea that a single ability is something that's
game
going
breaking.
To massively change
right?
the game.
Because from where the meta is right now, you have to run Baptiste on most maps because he has an ability that is a baby ultimate in and of itself, which is the don't die button.
But that's the biggest, like, that's the biggest wall to making somebody like me get involved in Overwatch. I don't know. I don't care. Like, I want to pick a character that I think is cool and play the game. But if I go in and I just get flamed because, well, I can't believe that you're picking the off tank that's actually this character. It's mm-hmm. because their DPS is, shut up. Like, it just, it makes it so hard to get people into that game.
Well, and you are never going to be able to
completely erase that.
Especially at the pro level, there's always going to be
the worst pick, period.
Or whatever the meta is considered. You know, even in something like Apex Legends, where abilities aren't super important, abilities are still important.
Yes, but I think that, like, de-emphasizing specific heroes that you have to play and making it more of a game that, again, like Apex Legends, there are characters you should pick, but if you're cracked at this one character, you should be viable to play them.
And I think it gives more room to the character specialists. We used to see that a lot in season one, where you would have Big Boss Pine. He'd come in on your hit scan player on any map that had an open skybox.
McCree on Ilios.
Yeah, if
played
it was,
by Pine, it was game over.
It was
1v6 and it was game over.
And that was great, I think, for Overwatch League, because that was equivalent to, you know, bringing in like a closer or bringing in a fourth line, like how they do in hockey. It was like this person who is specifically here to do this one thing doesn't have to be great at anything else. They are there to click heads and call it a day. And I really liked that, and I hope we see the resurgence of that through Overwatch 2, because everything will be a little bit more viable. Now, here's some of the negatives. One negative I see is that Overwatch 2 over the years became easier to follow as a casual from a viewing perspective.
The colors help a lot.
Not just that. It's because of it's not just that, but it's because of there became areas in which you would fight over that you looked at it and that's where they fight.
You know where the choke points are. You know where people are going to fight.
You see in every choke, you see the flanks, da 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 da. Yeah. So the map design was very much so like, here is where the action will happen, and I can anticipate it. So it's like football, right? So you get into the red zone, so you know you're about to anticipate some different kind of plays here, right? You know, you got a man on third base. You can anticipate maybe somebody try to do a squeeze bunt or something like that. So you kind of get it a little bit, but I think when you have DP or the potential for everything to be a DPS, that means fights just happen everywhere.
Yeah, just anywhere.
Well, and particularly too with that map that we saw on Push, it was like wide open spaces.
Yeah, so I think
I don't know if that's just based on the way that Push is designed to where fights can happen.
I would like
anywhere.
I would like to see an escort. Map.
A new escort map.
I would like to see a new escort map to see what's what. To be perfectly honest, I was lukewarm on what I saw. Let me put it that way.
It wasn't negative. It wasn't like I wasn't as stoked as a lot of people seem to be just because it's something new.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so I am happy CC is getting de-emphasized because I personally think if I am just better mechanically than you, then I should win the fight. So I'm interested to see that. But I mean, am I seeing Blizzard saving game? No, I'm not seeing that.
Yeah,
that's a major problem. That's a major. Before we move on, I just want to say that is a major problem. I am not seeing the game that is supposed to save both Blizzard and the Overwatch League. I'm not seeing it.
The only way that they make this happen is the Avengers Endgame. You know, there's one way, and that had to be overwhelming. Like positivity and excitement coming out of this. Instead, it's like mixed reviews. Nobody's like, oh, that's terrible. I hate it.
And Rick, you know what that one thing is? Do you know what the Doctor Strange portal of Overwatch 2 is? Do you know what it is? Is if through that portal, it wasn't T'Challa, it is a giant F, a giant 2, and a giant P. Okay? If this goes free to play, that will save this game. That will save this league. That will save this esport. If they come out and you still got to pay $40 to play this game, nobody fucking cares. It's over.
You have to remember, what was it? Just a few years ago, CSGO went free to play for the first time. And how long has it been around? And
20 years.
20 years. Saw unprecedented growth. A 20-year-old game saw unprecedented growth. So you're 100% right. Overwatch 2 does need to be free to play. It won't be.
No, absolutely not.
The
it won't be.
Best we can hope for, and the fact that it hasn't gone yet still makes me worry. Overwatch 1 needs to go free to play as sort of like a gateway into it.
Yeah,
yeah, hopefully. But moving on now, Twitch streamers are apparently, according to a report by Ari Notice of Kotaku, saying that there may be an option for Twitch streamers to activate a option in their chats that makes it so chatters have to confirm a phone number or email in order to participate in that chat.
How come just Twitch as a website overall doesn't make you confirm your identity so that way, you know, bots aren't being made left?
Listen, you are asking the wrong motherfucker because I personally think, I mean, the shit you make me go through to create, like, to become an affiliate, you know, is pretty robust. Mm-hmm. And it would be even more so for partners, which I understand, you making money, whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact that there isn't really a phone number, there is email confirmation, but there isn't a phone number confirmation to say that you're a real human being, is a bit crazy. But I think putting this in the hands of the streamers is a way for Twitch to exonerate themselves for the continuing hate raids and when things go stupid and so on and so forth.
What does this do for follows, though?
I don't know if it would affect the follows. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess
because
follows,
at least with
know.
What I've seen with a bunch of my friends, right? Because look, you can already stop people from, you know, doing dastardly stuff in chat by going into like a sub only mode or emote only mode, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What really sucks is when you have to like turn off your sound alerts because suddenly now there are 100 follow alerts coming through and disrupting everything, and your mods have to go through and delete 100 plus, you know, new follows. So to me, this right here, it's a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid for a problem that there's already a Band-Aid for.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even just that there's already a Band-Aid. I just honestly think this is a way for Twitch to say, we gave you the option and you didn't use it, so that's on you. And, you know, not only that, we gave you multiple options. So I think, you know, what it says is that once the tools are live, if you're a streamer, you'll be able to require viewers to verify a phone number before leaving comments. And the thing is, it says you can make it so they need to be chat. If they're chatting on your stream for the first time, the account has to be active for a certain number of hours or days. And you can set VIP exceptions for your mods and subs and stuff like that.
I don't know why that, at least the part where that has to be active for so many days, isn't just baked into the fact that you can't just like go and follow people already.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the problem is then you can't. It limits you if you make a new account and you want to start following people.
Well,
but
well,
at the same
see,
time,
see, to
tough,
me, that that's I think the biggest problem here is that whatever you're trying to do to protect streamers shouldn't also punish
the people
viewers
watching.
Or new accounts. Like I realize that that's probably the easiest way for you to do it, but maybe sit down and put on, you know, some grown up pants and really think about it for a second. You make bajillions of dollars, Amazon.
It's also a catch 22 because how could you not, right? It's like one of those things where it's like if people keep doing stupid enough stuff, at some point all of society has to pay the price for it.
Yeah,
and there's always someone who's two steps ahead of you, at least in the hacker game. And that's the biggest problem we're seeing, especially with what's going on Twitch, is that no matter what Twitch is going to do, the hackers are going to be two steps ahead. So the only way you can kind of subvert that is like
is
giving
make
a base level.
Yeah.
Here it is, and you just have to. Reddit is the perfect example of something that does that. Auto mods are like, yeah, you're not new, get out. And that's all it does. Mm-hmm. And it works. Unfortunately, it's kind of shitty because you can't just make an account and start liking and talking to people. But yet somehow Reddit doesn't have a problem with that.
Well, and I think also because Reddit, in many ways, you are there for something very specific.
Yeah.
And with Twitch, it's supposed to be about discoverability. It's supposed to be about...
Well, they're already suffering
this
with
that. I know, but it's supposed to be about, oh, wow, this channel's pretty cool. I happened upon it.
Or
let me hit follow.
If there is a follow, it's like a tentative follow. Mm-hmm. It's like I follow and you will be...
A trial follow.
Or something where it's like it's on a pending list. And then once you have your like a lot of days, you are officially a follower. Something. Mm-hmm. Something that's kind of like the intermediate level.
Just make people have to register with a damn phone number.
I mean, that's fine if that's
the
case.
How I feel.
I don't know if that's going to 100% solve it.
It won't 100% solve it, but
it'll definitely cut it down.
It will stop people from being able to make 400 bots
because
that go into nowhere.
You want to know if you think the problem with the bots and emails an issue? You go into the scamming of phone numbers and all these fake phone numbers. 100% not going to work.
Well, here's the thing, though. They did it with CSGO. They have a thing called Prime accounts.
Yeah.
And Prime accounts get matched with other Prime accounts when they're playing. And if you don't have a Prime account, you can only tie your phone number to one account. So you can't continue to use that phone number over and over. So I think that what it did is it still allowed people who wanted to cheat to get in there.
Yeah.
But it's that extra step.
It's like,
you know,
one
I mean?
More thing. That mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's like condoms. It's not going to – I'm not looking for 100% certainty here, but if you can cut down
– If you could give me 85%.
Fair. Sure, I'll take it.
Yeah, we'll see. At that point, hey, act a guy. I just think any extra layers to make it more difficult is a good thing. I don't mind attaching my phone number to my Twitch account, and I know a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, but it's so many layers. Da-da-da. Listen, if you want to be somewhere, you want to be somewhere, okay?
It needs to have the two-factor authentication attached to it, bare bones. You know, if that's in it, we might be okay. If it doesn't, it's not going to do anything.
Yeah, so anyway, we got our first looks at a few video game properties over the weekend. Netflix had a big – they called their shit To-Doom. Which is the dumbest fucking name for a conference.
Could you say it again?
To-Doom.
To-Doom.
Is it supposed to mean something?
It's supposed to be like dum-dum.
Oh.
Like the sound it makes when you start.
It should be
dum-dum. It's
then.
Dumb. It's dumb.
Not to-doom.
Just call it Netfest. I don't know.
Netflix.
Fest.
Net-flix.
Anyway, whatever. It's dumb. They had a thing.
Well,
okay.
Aren't they doing that geek thing? I don't really understand.
Netflix Geeked is just a different
stream. Oh, that's a separate
stream.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is like for
the
Netflix
whole,
as a whole.
The whole platform. This is like the CES of Netflix, if you will, where they show off all of their products coming for the next year or so. We got our first look at a ton of stuff. Obviously, we got our first look at the Cowboy Bebop show, as well as Arcane, but I want to put Arcane off to the side.
Yes, please.
Because that deserves its own conversation. I think we should have that conversation tomorrow. But I want to talk about two things in particular, because we saw the Cowboy Bebop trailer, and
orgasms.
Chad, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm on the same boat. I'm happy. It went all in. Everybody was like, oh, what is it going to be? They went and got the original composer,
yep,
who is going to be doing original pieces for this show.
They did such a good job on that intro.
And it's like, and then I go on and I go through the comments on Twitter, and the first thing I say is, it looks like fan shit. It looks so hokey.
That's what
so
it fucking is. Get the fuck
cheesy.
Out. It's exactly it looks, what it's supposed to be.
And it's just like, first of all, why can't we can't have shit? It's clear.
This is a very old anime. This is meant for people who haven't discovered this, and to get them in. This is for the new generation. This isn't for these old generations.
But not even that. Because first of all, I am a huge proponent of old anime art styles anyway. I don't even like how most new anime is drawn. But the biggest thing is that Cowboy Bebop is about vibes. It's the same thing that Samurai Champloo was about. They played baseball in that anime, okay? Nobody comes like, that's an anachronism. The baseball wasn't invented yet. Nobody gives two fucks because it was about the vibe, okay? And that's what this show is about. It's about vibes. And let me tell you something, that captured the vibe off the rip.
At the end of the day, my analysis is this. It's obviously done by a bunch of people who like Cowboy Bebop, right? That's it. That's all I need.
That's the first bar.
Someone just has to love it enough to give it the respect it deserves.
And it's a bunch of people coming together to try to do right by a property that they obviously like. Here's the thing. In that trailer, you saw three different episodes, two of which are my favorite of the series, are going to be recreated probably shot for shot.
Oh, my God.
Okay? They may have... There's no Ed. We see no Ed in it.
I think they're holding that one.
I was about to say, I have a feeling this is only going to be season one and season two, because Ed doesn't come in until like halfway through the series.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's probably
season two. So I think we're only going to get like... I mean, because to be perfectly honest, there are certain episodes, like Jupiter Blues is a two-part episode.
Yes.
There's like five two-part episodes. You could make a lot of those episodes two-parters if you just want to kind of have a little more characterization.
Yeah.
Which I think they will.
They can Final Fantasy VII remake this. I think
that's the accurate description of like the same people who are pissing and moaning that it's like a fan-made project are the same ones that when Final Fantasy VII was rolling around, they were like, oh my God, I can't believe they changed the tile set that was here. It was 10 steps and now it's 8. Like, you're not going to find an easy agreement. People are either going to be mad that you were too faithful, or they're going to be too mad that you
I am of the belief that when you're talking about a project like this, you can't be too faithful.
Yeah.
Because when we look back on another project, which is a film that was incredibly faithful to the comic books and changed a few things in the third act, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Correct.
In which everybody goes back, and if you read the books, you then watch that movie and you go, I'm pissed they had to fit it all in one movie.
Yeah.
But when you look at how they captured the tone, they captured the vibe, the casting was perfect, the soundtrack was perfect, they recreated most of it shot for shot, and you go back and you say, is there some hokiness to it? Yes. Brandon Routh as the third boyfriend looks objectively like shit. Yeah. He looks dumb, okay? But you know what? You accepted it. You suspended your disbelief because it was dumb. He punches the highlights out of a girl's hair, okay? It's stupid, all right? But you accept it because that's the vibe of the books.
Yeah.
So if we go in and I get to see John Cho do Jeet Kune Do and fight people to a jazz soundtrack, how are you mad about this?
I was thinking about that. That's the one thing that I'm worried about, is him being as good as Spike in the fights.
No, he broke his ankle doing this shit. Like they straight up held up production because he said, I'm doing it myself. Okay. He's like, I am going to sit. I'm sitting down for a year and a half, and I'm learning Jeet Kune Do, and I'm going to do this shit myself. And he broke his ankle, and he came back, and he said, I'm going to finish it myself. So
all right,
I give respect to John Cho on that shit.
I still hope it's looks good.
I think he looks dope. I think he looks... I everybody's like talking about how cheesy he looks. I think he looks dope.
No, shut up. What's cheesy? Like,
there's nothing cheesy about
it's
it.
It's not cheesy. No. The only reason it's cheesy is because it's like the internet hot take to put out there.
No,
like,
here's at the end of the day what it is. It is internet fanboys mad because the actress who plays Faye is like... Hey, this is a real character, and you're not just going to be able to spank to her.
You know what, Mike?
Like, everybody... No, in their mad, they're like, so many comments. I'm so upset that the lead actress went out against the fans. It's so disrespectful. The fans are who makes the series. Fuck you.
You know what this reminds me of more than anything else is my favorite anime adaptation to live action. Fucking Speed Racer. That's what this looks like. And Speed Racer was great.
I never actually watched it.
It was done by Lily Wachowski, one of the people behind The Matrix. Like, mm-hmm. It was a whole, like, as a piece of cinema, trying to create anime is so fucking hard.
Another good example is, because there are two types of adaptations, right? There's adapting there's adapting the story or the source material into the real world on film.
Like Marvel stuff.
Or there's actually trying to take what is on the screen or the page and just put it on film.
Yes.
Like, with real people.
Like Sin City, for example.
Exactly.
It's probably one of the best examples. And look, I'll tell you right now. So I'm not a Cowboy Bebop fan. I haven't watched it yet. I want to watch this first so that my opinion is
fresh.
Unpainted, right? But this is the one thing, my one, not even criticism isn't the right word, mm-hmm. but I think I get where some people are kind of coming from. And I hate this when they do it in superhero movies as well, when you try to make as accurate of a depiction of the costume from the page to the mm-hmm. screen as possible. With superheroes, it usually looks super dumb. Like, go ahead and modernize them. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Make them look okay. And to me, I think maybe that's what it is that hokiness comes.
Let me tell you. No.
Trying to
and I push back against that, because if you tried to make Faye Valentine's costume in real life, it's not practical.
Yeah, her titties are coming out.
No,
it doesn't. You can't do it.
I agree. And because there's like some weird in between, maybe that's where they're coming from. I don't know. I wouldn't care if they went and just practical. It doesn't even have to be the same color. We know who the characters are.
Right.
And who the characters are do not come from what they're wearing. It's how they act.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I personally am super excited for this. All the major pieces that should be there are there. Rick, to your point, is that it's clearly made by people who love the series.
The end. I don't need anything else.
The end. Right? Once you told me you had the original composer on board, that was the last bar for me. I'm in. I'm all the way in. That was the last thing I needed to hear, because there was no way you're going to be able to make Cowboy Bebop and then have basic anime or basic action movie fight soundtrack in this series. No, it has to be jazz.
Had they not put the opening out, had they just put out nothing until you watched the first episode and that opening kicks on, you would have heard no complaints. Zero. And, yeah. But now people just like to look at it in a vacuum and they're just little babies.
Yeah, they are. But anyway, that's going to be it for part one and part two. Marvel Monday, as always, we're going to talk about the future of the What If series as well as Party Thor, the last episode. We got more coming up on Checkpoint Daily.
Bring the heat. Share your thoughts on socials with us at Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter. You could even be featured on tomorrow's show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Checkpoint Daily, your number one resource for esports news, video games, all the cool stuff that you like to talk about with your friends. We got it here. We also got it over on the website, checkpointxp.com. Make sure you go over and check it out. All the good news and stories about video games, we got it over there, checkpointxp.com.
Can I just mention a story that I haven't written yet, but I want people to look forward to because I'm really excited about writing this?
Yeah.
Is, I don't know how many I'm going to do, but let's say five Avengers or non-Avengers, whatever, who would survive the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
Nice.
Look forward to it.
I still don't know how Iron Man got because that you'd think
it's... He's just Ant-Man. A fucking dude.
If he stays in his suit, though, he should be safe, but Ant-Man probably got down.
He's just a dude.
That's fair.
He's not even a power dude. He's just a dude, okay? Flat out.
Okay.
The only regular dude in all comic books that will survive a zombie apocalypse is Batman, because Batman is already prepared for a zombie apocalypse. Anyway.
Do they have DC zombies, right? Yeah.
No.
Because don't they have... I could have swore I saw something. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Anyway,
I think they have something similar. I think it's called, like, Deceased or something like that.
I love that, by the way. I'm sold. Love it. Bring me more.
I hate it. Anyway...
Blackest Night was their...
Blackest Night is essentially
zombies. Was the original zombie story.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right. So also, because of the Mario movie, I want to put it out there that I have suggested we do fan castings for the rest of the week.
Know what? That could even just be something we bring back around.
Yeah, we'll bring it back around. But, you know, we're going to talk different video games and what our great but not great fan castings would be. And just something fun to do. But anyway, Marvel Monday, as always, we're here to talk about the MCU. But first and foremost, we always got to talk about What If, because it is the show going on right now. Party Thor is, I don't care what the episode is called. Party Thor is
what
happened.
What if Thor was an only child?
What if Thor was an only child, which means he just basically became a frat bro. You know him from... your local Lambda chapter. And let me just say this. This was not one of my favorite episodes. I understood what the episode was trying to do. But, like, if I'm Thor, why am I still fucking around with Jane? I'm trying to get at Captain Marvel, man. Like, that's what I'm trying to get
at. Yeah, so I too have complicated feelings about this. Look, just as an episode, as it was... It's fine.
It's fine.
It did the job it was supposed to do, and it's definitely trying to fill a different sort of spot compared to some of the other episodes. Like, there was nothing about this episode that you should have taken seriously. This was just a fun episode. They were maybe even trying to, maybe recapture some of, like, the humor that people liked about...
Of, like, phase one, like, early phase.
I was even thinking of Thor Ragnarok, right? Where, you know, Thor actually got, you know, funny. But kind of like with you, I don't know. I didn't really think that he was any different from himself. Obviously, Loki not being in his life, yes, would have a profound impact on Thor. But I don't know. I just wasn't sold on this was the way that I think Thor would have grown up if Loki wasn't there.
You know what this gives me glimpses of? Because I actually have finally caught up just so that you guys would stop yelling at me.
Dummy.
It feels a lot like this could be the... Maybe not the exact Thor, but shades of this Thor in Thor Love and Thunder, right? Around with the Guardians of the Galaxy, no Loki around.
Sure, where he's kind of like giving up on his responsibilities. He's like, look, I'm done with that god life.
Exactly.
And that's cool, right? That's cool. But I definitely feel like, look, if Thor would have grown up as an only child, he would have had both the attention of his parents on him. He should have been more responsible of an adult.
I agree. No, I actually agree. And I think the thing that is most... I would say frustrating about this particular What If...
Besides the Jane stuff.
Besides the Jane stuff, is the fact that I feel like... Is that really that shocking? I feel like the response from the S.H.I.E.L.D. characters was kind of dumb. I feel like, you know, even just the characterization of, like... Thor invited us for a big, huge party on this planet. Woo! And it's
it was kind of dumb. And honestly, I think that was intentional, given, you know, how serious a lot of the other episodes were.
Yeah, probably.
I didn't hate it. I'm real ambivalent about it. Right?
Like, were you entertained?
I watched it. The most entertaining thing about it was definitely the ending.
Okay.
Yes.
Here's another thing that I want
to... and of course the fight between Captain Marvel. Thor and Captain Marvel throwing down was great.
I also want to know, did you see that Party Thor is in commercials now that they have...
I haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have promotional commercials for this, and it has him driving around in a Jeep because of... Fucking course. But the other thing I wanted to ask is, Party Thor was able to lift the hammer. What is it about this Party Thor that made him still worthy of lifting
the hammer?
He's still
Thor.
Yeah, and
he's still the Odinson.
But he's never been changed.
No, hold on, okay, hold on.
All right.
What you're missing was,
yes,
the hammer was never taken away from him, right? That's the big difference. Originally, Thor came to Earth, and the way that he learned all the lessons he did was because Odin took it away and said, you have to prove you're worthy.
Okay.
But he never got put into a position where his father didn't see him as worthy.
Right, because he's the only kid.
Yeah, he's the only child. And when Odin was around, he obviously behaved himself.
Right, which was clear. That was, I mean, that was him and his mom behaved themselves, because as soon as he went into the Odin sleep, his mom was like,
the peace.
Sex in the City wine party. Here we go. Like, you know, it was just like, you know, and I think that part of it was really funny. Like, anything dealing with how Asgard reacted to it was great. I love that stuff. I love anything giving more characterization to the Asgardians, because I think they all are tragically underutilized in the MCU. But I think the one thing that I always get frustrated with is when you see these crazy displays of power and the humans are like, we must stop this, and they call Captain Marvel and all this other shit. I hate it how quickly everybody was just like, Thor's mom's coming, make everything nice. Dude, I'd have just been like, what the f-? If this motherfucker's scared of his mom, how powerful is she? Nah, blow him up. Blow him up. That's what the reaction should have been, that would have stayed in character to me, that I think would have been a great moment to have the Thor heel turn, and it would have been truly divergent from what we normally see from Thor or from anybody like that. So I would have preferred that. But it's a 7 out of 10 episode.
I think they were looking to try and do like a straight-up comedy episode. Like there's no stakes whatsoever, just Thor being goofy.
Up until the end, though. That ending was...
Now, the ending...
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the ending, because we know, thanks to the mid-season trailer that they put out, that we're going to get more of Killmonger's Wakanda. We're going to get more of the zombies. And and obviously, what makes this ending different, because every single episode except for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Sadness ended with, oh, that's a story for another time, and like a big sort of like, oh man, what's gonna happen next? Oh, we're never gonna find
out. It felt like a Scooby-Doo ending most of the time.
Not even just that, it's the way that the Watcher reacted. The Watcher was getting ready to wrap everything up just like he normally does, and when Ultron and the Infinity Stones walked out of there, even the Watcher went, the fuck?
Yeah.
So Chad, do you want to know what this twist ending was?
Sure.
Okay, so like, an evil Vision showed up wearing Ultron's, he was armored in Ultron's form, right? So he essentially was Ultron. And he was wielding the Infinity Stones.
In his chest. You see a bunch of Ultron mechs walk out. You see Ultron's silhouette with the Infinity Stones in his chest, but he's missing one. And then the visor comes up, and you see the Mind Stone. Because remember, Ultron originally...
was Vision.
Vision was going to be his final form. So this is a version of Ultron who successfully made the Vision, collected the Infinity Stones, and is now like, I'm going to go conquer some more worlds.
I'm excited for that, because I always felt like Ultron... That storyline kind of like lived and died, and then like I feel like no one talked... Like everyone talks about Thanos. Everyone always thinks of Thanos. But
Chad...
Forget about Ultron.
Look, I personally don't get this, because it's one of my favorite movies.
James Spader.
But by and large, most people hate
the Age of
Ultron.
Ultron.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I don't get it either. So I'm really excited to see Ultron coming back. And so, and
I just hate that they killed the hot Quicksilver.
I'm indifferent on Age of Ultron. I think, obviously... Let me put it this way. I didn't like Age of Ultron because it felt like y'all made a whole ass movie just to justify making the Vision as a character, which to me, I feel like I need a whole ass movie about that. But I appreciate the Age of Ultron because so much shit comes out of that film. Vision comes out of that film. No, Sokovia, of course, comes out of that film.
Wanda
comes out of that film.
It sets up all.
It sets up. It is arguably the most impactful Marvel film out of all of them.
Well, it's the first one that truly breaks out of the Avengers outside of the main cast that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it
also, besides the Aether in Thor: Dark World, it's the first film that starts to really mention and mess with the ideas of the Infinity Stone, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that this was selected to go towards the end of the run?
Absolutely.
I'm saying because of the whole alternate realities and dimensions and starting to get into the Doctor Strange, actual movies.
So the thing that I think is that what if was supposed to feel episodic, unconnected, unrelated to anything else that they made until the very end.
Marvel ain't gonna make something and then just be like, "Oh, don't worry, it's not
until
in the MCU."
Until the
DC
very
might, but
right until the very end where we realize, oh, okay, well, it actually is connected to everything.
It sets it up really. It's such the perfect project for that, to where you can still say it's all connected, but still have it be on its own. And I think that it's real ambitious and very Marvel to at the end be like, nah, everything is still connected. Yeah. Every episode, every show, everything.
It definitely, I feel like that's the kind of Machiavellian shit that they like. They don't just do it, you know?
No, they're never going to do something just to do
just
something.
Just to do it. Yeah. No, but I agree. I think this this week's episode should give us a very, very good look into what the overall plan actually is.
Yeah, I think these last two episodes are going to be a part one and a part two that will bring together a bunch of them, including Star-Lord T'Challa coming
where
back.
You, yes. Where do you stand right now overall as a series? Like, having seen
it's
everything?
It's the second best.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, Robbie?
I put it just above WandaVision, mm-hmm. simply because my mind was open to things I didn't know I would like.
Yeah.
Like, T'Challa, Star-Lord, some shit, I was like, if I read that sentence,
you'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
This time,
conceptually,
this time 2 months ago, I'm like, what a dumb fucking idea.
Conceptually, I like WandaVision more, but for me, it was too slow of a start.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd probably go Falcon and Winter Soldier. WandaVision and What If are sort of
neck
interchangeable.
And neck, yeah.
And then Loki.
Then Loki. I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that assessment. It's like Loki's last episode is like, fuck.
I'm gonna get flamed for this if the right people hear it. But I'm gonna be honest, guys. Loki felt like they outsourced it to CW.
Straight up though.
It all felt, right, Ben, you heard him say that?
No, right, I'm just
If I had to separate things though, zombies top of the line. Everything else underneath it.
Okay, Chad, thank you for that wonderful, wonderful assessment.
Go play Dead by Daylight.
Anyway, with all that said, that's going to be it for this episode of Checkpoint Daily. We'll be back tomorrow with even more esports and video game news. Hope you guys have a great day. For Weird Beer, Robbie Landis, and Chad Callahan, I'm your host, Norris Howard, and we hope you have a good one. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.